Four men. Four men. Masters in their fields. Coming together to pontificate on science and technology. These great men, dedicated to truth, honor, and justice in the American way, are the Gizmo Sisters.
Hey, and welcome to Homo Sapiens Podcast 105. This is Chris, and with me today is Matt.
Hello.
And we're sitting in wonderful Panera Bread on New Year's Day 2016. And that's why you'll have this lovely classical music behind us speaking today, which we usually don't have anything, but...
adds a little class.
Yeah, it does. And Paul was too drunk to join us today. I actually thought about calling Warren, because he lives right over here, and saying, hey,
go on over.
But we want to wish everybody, a belated happy holidays, and obviously a happy new year. It's been a while since we did a podcast, only because schedules got crazy busy after October 1st. I traveled every week from October 1st until the weekend before Christmas.
Wow.
And it didn't feel like Christmas to me this year until Christmas Day. I mean, we barely got a Christmas tree up and didn't wrap any presents. The kids got fed their presents out of paper bags. Here you go. Hope you like it. That's okay. You don't really need to wrap cartons of cigarettes. Smoke up. No, just kidding. So today we're actually going to talk about our prediction show for the rest of the year. And hopefully, you know, never done this, and I've been doing this podcast for 5 years or so, longer than that maybe. You would never know it by the number of episodes, because we try to do a monthly podcast, and then there's months when we don't get it done. But I want to do a predictions podcast where we make predictions this year, and then we go back next January 1st or close to January 1st and see what predictions came true, see how on the nose we are. So I'm going to let Matt go first. I told Matt and Paul, who was invited to pull up, create four predictions for the new year. And we will have some discussion around that and why we think it's true.
Well, see, I have two Apple-related predictions, and I'm trying to decide which one of the two I want to go with. I think I'm going to go with Apple stock will be lower at the end of 2016 than the beginning.
Why do you say that?
There doesn't seem to be anything really, truly innovative coming. Now, I don't know, maybe you know more about that than I do, but the Apple Watch was not revolutionary. It didn't really... It didn't change lives for... like the iPhone did.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, the iPhone was a truly revolutionary thing. We're on, what, the seventh
iteration
version of that? You know, I mean, there hasn't been anything truly new and innovative, so...
Well, I would disagree with that to some extent. I actually would take this a little bit farther and not just Apple. I think we're in a plateauing period of computer technology or IT technology.
Sure.
I think the Apple Watch was a little more revolutionary than people think, but it's one of those things where it instead of being actively, you know, because we went from, you know, there at the time when the iPhone came out, the cell phone industry, the hardware was rife for sure. Interruption. So it seems like it was a big deal when we went from, you know, flip phones and
you know, the watch has been around for hundreds of years.
Correct. But at least a lot of the analyst reports and things we're finding is that there was not a lot of fanfare around the watch, because there was a lot of pessimism around wearable computing technology. What does it really get me? I mean, the Pebble's been around for several years. Android's been playing around with watches for a while. None of those have really taken off. Now, compared to that, the Apple Watch has sold a ton more than all of those combined. That being said, what does it really do? It's really more of a... It's part of that iPhone ecosystem. And so I don't think it's going to be something who people who don't have one... Because one, unlike a phone today, the watch is a want, not a need.
Right.
So, you know, there will be quite a few people who will never have a smartwatch, at least for the next 10 years. Because eventually, I have a feeling that in 10 years' time, all watches will be smartwatches to some degree. They're all going to have...
What I'm saying, though, is I'm not wearing one.
There's quite a few people who don't wear watches anymore. Who needs it when you have a cell phone that always keeps time? But the people who have the watches, they don't realize how much it has disrupted their routine to make it better. You know?
Okay.
And I think that's where the revolution comes in. But I agree with you in that I think the industry as a whole is kind of stagnated. I mean, one of I made some joke predictions, and one of the ones I made is that... Apple will make newer iPhones, Macs, and Apple Watches and iPads this year. Okay? And I said, Microsoft will release another version of Windows with new confusing interface, yet no actual improvements in the operating system. And it's no longer compatible with anything previous to the... Okay? But that's still moving forward. You know, there's still some innovation in those things that they do. The iPad Pro is a good example. A lot of people won't buy the iPad Pro one because... It wasn't designed for them. The regular iPad or another 9.8 or 6-inch tablet, that's for them. iPad Pro was designed for, kind of in our vein of work, for artists and professional users who have a need to be able to do fine art and drawing and need a bigger screen for that second screen.
Sure.
But I'll give you an example of where I think they really, and I was skeptical at first, because I didn't buy it at first. And I am getting a little more skeptical as I get older, but we're recording this podcast on a 12-inch MacBook. I thought they were cool when I went in. They're razor thin. They weigh almost nothing. I still, for my job and for a lot of the creative things that I do, I need something that has a keyboard and a trackpad. And I think the reason Apple hasn't gone with touchscreen interfaces on their laptops is because they have a touchscreen trackpad, you know, that has all these multi-touch gestures. And, you know, the one thing that drives me nuts about a... Yeah, we'll talk about that. That drives me nuts about my computer with a high-end screen is, it, even with the iPad Pro, is the getting fingerprints on the screen when I'm trying to look at something pretty. And, you know, they've done that. But you're talking about the machine is fast, very high performance, has an incredible battery life. And so the innovation was improving upon something that was already hard to improve upon. Same thing with, I think Microsoft's in the same thing. You know, if you're going for a Windows laptop, the only, and many people won't afford it because, one, they went to that, they're trying to compete with Apple and Apple's space, which is, you know, a high-end device that lasts longer, so you depreciate it or you amortize the cost you pay up front over a longer period of time. But the Surface. So, yeah, the Surface 1, yeah, it needed improvement. But when they went to the Surface, by the time they got the Surface 3, again, third generation is usually when they start getting it. Surface 3, the Pro is a nice tablet. So what did they have to do to go to the 4? Well, we had to make it a little bit bigger. And then what else did we do? Well, now because Apple's MacBook Air makes a ton of money, and so does the new MacBook line, we need to have the Surface Book. Now, the Surface Book, somebody who's really smart in the IT industry and enterprise IT made a comment about the Surface, and he goes, Surface Book, and he goes, it is the coolest thing, or he goes, genius and total disaster, I thought were much more farther apart than they are. And so the Surface Books, you know, it's 1.0, maybe by version 3.0, if it lasts that long, they will have it. But the Surface Pro 4 is nice. Now, would I buy a Surface Pro 4 to replace my Surface Pro 3? Probably not. That that ship has sailed. You know, I don't see enough differences to compel me to want to change that. But, you know, there's innovation happening. I think it's more of the fine-tuning of personal technology right now than it is the leaps and bounds. Now, there are pieces I believe will leap and bound and be revolutionized. Like here at Panera, I paid with Apple Pay. As that kind of that mobile payment system and how it ties back in the added encryption and everything, I think that is revolutionary. And on a recent 60 Minutes, it was about a mobile payment system in Kenya called M-Pesa. I think that will be coming worldwide. And the reason M-Pesa is important is because it's a mobile payment system that works on the cheapest cell phone in the world, the lowest end model you can buy for developing markets. It's fast, it's encrypted transactions, but it doesn't require a bank. It's more like Western Union. I go to an M-Pesa kiosk, and those kiosks are in their versions of 7-Elevens and all over the country, and they take their money and they put it in give it to the M-Pesa kiosk, and they load it in the system, and all of a sudden they now have money to pay for everything on their with their phone, and they're not carrying cash around where it could easily be stolen. It's PIN protected and has other protections for the transaction, but all the businesses, power companies, water companies, food, taxis, they all take M-Pesa. So these people are, it's total digital cash. And that's only with 19 million people. Now, oddly enough, they said that they rolled it out to India and another country. And in those countries, it's struggling. But what was interesting in Kenya is they asked the gentleman who was an Oxford-educated Kenyan who created and designed M-Pesa. He actually, M-Pesa is part of their major cell phone provider there. They're making $250 million on the micro payments that they take off the top. He goes, we don't have to be greedy to make a lot of money.
And that's, if there's a way to stick it to the banks.
Well, that tells me that. And he also talked about in the interview that was, it was a great interview. I don't want to say this, that banking lobbies in all the other countries in the world were stepping up to block them because they know that their industry is rife for disruption. And he said the cool thing was that the Kenyan government said, we're not going to legislate against this. We're going to just let the market determine what's going to happen.
Which is a pretty progressive way of thinking, and you almost never see that in a legislature.
Yeah, well, and the thing is, I think Kenya knew that they had to do something because most Kenyans live on less than $2 a day. So it's not he gave examples. He goes, we're in the more developed world, you go out and buy a loaf of bread, or you buy a tube of toothpaste, or you buy a pack of cigarettes. And he goes, not in Kenya. They buy a cigarette, or a squeeze of toothpaste, or a slice of bread. And that is the common transactional nature of their market.
Well, we don't need to do that.
No.
That would suck.
Two slices of bread, that'll be $22, please. Wait, we are at Panera. Okay, well, I'm going to give one of my predictions.
Okay.
By the time we do this show next year, Donald Trump will be the president-elect.
Now, that ties into one of mine, and I think it's going to be by a landslide.
Oh, I think it will, too.
60-40 is, I think, very doable. His only real hurdle is going to be the GOP nomination. But I think even that's...
Well, I agree with you there. I think even that's not as big a hurdle as the GOP wants you to make it think it's going to be right now. Because they've got to realize that any split within the Republican Party immediately means Hillary's won.
Well, and that's where I think there is an element of the party that is trying to hang on to power. And I don't think they care whether or not Hillary is in power, so long as they hold on to their little piece of the pie. And those are the folks that need to go. And Trump is the only candidate right now that makes all the right people angry.
Oh, absolutely.
And I mean all of them. They're all angry. And I hope that he has that level of success. There you go.
Yeah. Well, you know, I think what'll be interesting is, so when George Bush Sr., you know, went for president, he had a similar smelling odd against him, and the way they fixed that was they made his running mate Dan Quayle, so they get that block of vote. Right. So it'll be interesting to see who is, you know, when it comes down to it, who's Trump's running mate.
Well, I'd like to thank Ted Cruz.
Yeah. And based on his comments, I think that's where he's thinking going to.
Yeah, I mean, don't get me wrong. I think Ted Cruz still thinks there's a path to victory for him. But that road is narrowing every day, I think.
Yeah.
The other side, my prediction is Hillary will have to announce that she has some major medical conundrum. Now, will that stop her from running? No. But I do think the electorate will take that into account.
Yeah, I think you're probably right. Something's going to happen. Something, you know, with all the stuff with Benghazi and Emailgate and all of these things that have gone on, I don't think there's any confidence in the electorate for her. I think the only reason that she's popular, particularly with liberal women, is just because she is a woman. Yeah. And Bernie Sanders is, you know, he is a socialist by far.
Admitted socialist.
Yeah, you know, so, and I love his economic policy. You know, everybody deserves to go to college. We need to lower taxes.
His energy plan consists of a power strip plugged into itself.
Exactly.
Yeah, you know, I mean, it's...
Well, this actually ties into one of my predictions.
Okay.
In a weird way. So, one of my predictions, and Apple seems to be getting the brunt of this, but they're not the only one. Again, kind of like the whole... you know, you're talking about their stock price. I believe Apple will still be the company who will spearhead individual privacy and fight governments to on that backdoor encryption and help the government reform our corporate tax laws. Because, I mean, think about it. We got socialist countries who have better corporate tax law systems than ours. 40% is a lot. And Apple's not the only company. They may be the most valuable company in the world and have $200 billion in money that they're leaving outside of the U.S. because to pay 40% on it is rape and torture. But they're not the only ones. Every Fortune 500 company Sure. is in that boat. Google's in that boat. Microsoft's in that boat. If the U.S. wants to bring that money home and bring home that this is also a key to bringing home manufacturing and making America great again, it is to revise this corporate tax structure so that, you know, companies can afford to bring the money home, which brings jobs home and everything else. It doesn't take a math genius to figure out that if a zero of 200 billion is not as good as 10% of 200 billion or, you know, whatever it ends up being.
The problem with this is that the liberals in this country have made such a PR hit job on these companies that making that argument that simple is still not enough.
Oh,
I know. Convince, you know.
Well, it's the issue. There's three issues within our government that literally I could see a civil war being fought over now. And the three issues are redistribution of wealth, whether it's corporate or personal, gun control, and the privacy encryption. You know, let's create a backdoor for the government so that they can get into this stuff, because it might, on some off chance, it might make our intelligence somewhat better. Sorry, guys. If you, even when NSA was had the illegal wiretapping going on, if you think that they were catching 99.9% of what was going on, you're wrong. The volume of data is too great. So it's a moot point. Just let it be encrypted, because you, as Tim Cook made a great comment in his 60 Minutes interview, and he said, we make a backdoor for the government means we make a backdoor for everybody, because that's where somebody will find that flaw, and then everybody's at risk.
Yeah.
You know.
Every time I hear about one of those healthcare data breaches or a bank data breach, I often wonder if that was not something that was created so that the government could go in and do their snooping into stuff they have no business being in the first place. Mm-hmm.
I totally agree with you. I mean,
I think it goes into mission creep. Now, I just finished writing a story for the Heartland Institute about New Mexico reforming their civil asset forfeiture laws, which was actually their reform package was considered the gold standard. But guess what? There is not a single municipality or jurisdiction in the state of New Mexico that is following the new law. Not only are they not following it, they're expanding their usage of civil asset forfeiture. Did you know that if you are caught drunk driving in New Mexico, they can now seize your car? If you were drag racing in Albuquerque, they will seize your car. This is not what civil asset forfeiture was even designed to do.
No,
it's
not at all.
It's mission creep, and that's what government does.
Oh, absolutely.
You give them an inch, they take you a mile.
Well, again, it kind of goes to, this is my rice bowl, and I want to make my rice bowl bigger and deeper. And how do I do that?
Well, I just find it amazing that there's people who raise their right hand and swear on a stack of Bibles that they're going to uphold the law, and then turn around and just ignore it.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. I see that whole civil forfeit
civil asset forfeiture.
Yeah, civil asset forfeiture issue is becoming a big deal, like California right now. So you now have to, if you legally own a gun in California, if the police tell you that you must surrender it, you have to surrender it.
Sure.
As of today.
Today.
Jeez. Yeah, right. You know why the Japanese didn't invade the west coast of the United States? They were afraid because the United States had so many guns out there. And you really, here's the other thing. So, you know, everybody talks about Australia as the gold standard for gun turning and everything. They believe they only got 3% of all the guns in Australia. Legally owned guns.
Sure.
You know, in the United States, there's more guns than there are people. And I'll tell you now, if you think I'm going to just roll over because the government says for me to do something See, the problem is the government does not want to follow the Constitution. Well, it's not the government. People don't want to follow the Constitution anymore because it is now getting in their way on their road to power. And that's not what the government's for. It's for the people, by the people, of the people. Not for the person, by the person, of the person. And do you really think even a lot of legal gun owners are going to just, you know, walk away and turn in every gun they own? If they're told to. I don't believe so. I don't believe the government has the manpower to go out and find them all. And what if people say, oh, I sold that at a Bill Goodman's gun show, you know, 2 years ago.
I threw it in a lake.
Yeah. Oh, I got rid of it for you. What are you going to do? You know? Even if you literally did throw it in a lake, there's a lot of good guns out there that today you could throw in the lake and go back a year later and get it out, and it would still work fine.
Particularly if you put it in a watertight bag.
Yeah.
Just saying.
Yeah, true.
You know, it could happen.
But, I mean, you know, the whole idea is stupid. And all the states who initiated concealed carry largely did it because their population was concealed carrying anyway. And so now it was a legal route to get to that point, kind of like legalizing marijuana in many ways, you know, that, from that argument perspective. Sure. And but their violent crime rates dropped every state. And look whose violent crime rates have not, and they keep climbing. Chicago. I mean, it's ridiculous.
I'd have to do the math, but I'd have to think that if you're a 19-year-old black male, is your survivability rate of seeing 21 greater in Chicago or in Iraq or Afghanistan? I would have to think the math on that would be very interesting.
I would, too. I really would. That you know, that may be some... you might, even though math is hard for you, Matt, you might have to go and
try and crunch those numbers.
Try and crunch those numbers. So, you did the last one, right? I did the last. Yeah, you go ahead.
Well, since we're talking government policies kind of stuff, I think I don't know if this will happen this year, but we'll throw it out there as something that you can say I'm wrong about. I think they will mandate smart cars. And the reason why they will is so that we can be nanny stated into preventing drunk driving, for instance. I mean, it just seems like that's a reasoning that we'll be hearing.
So, you know, the smart car and I'm assuming you mean the self-driving cars.
Oh, yeah.
I don't believe that technology is...
No, it's not quite ready yet. I don't think it'll be ready at all this year. But
I think we still have 10 to 20 years on that.
I don't know about that.
Well, one... So, that's going to hit the liberal voting group pretty hard. If they mandate smart cars. And so, I actually don't think it'll be something that... the Socialist Democratic Party in the United States will advocate, at least anytime soon, because, you know, that means that, you know, their people will no longer have the privilege of being able to drive, and they'll make the argument of driving to their $15 an hour minimum wage jobs and being able to support themselves and their family. Now, that being said, most of those people who want the 15-hour jobs or no job at all but yet want the car, the government might just give it to them because, again, in the 1860s, let's get rid of personal slavery, and it took us to the 1930s to figure out that we can have governmental or corporate slavery in a different way.
Mm-hmm.
But I still think that... through regulation and everything, I still think we're a good 10 years away, possibly 20. Because there's so many other things right now that the Department of Transportation is trying to figure out, and State Department of Transportation are trying to figure out with cars as it is anyway. Like the only real reason that electric cars haven't taken off is not because the technology isn't good or is not good enough at this point. Because... you know, the industry, you know, right now your Teslas and the Fiskars and some of those other cars that are out there, the only reason they cost so much is because there's not any economy of scale. You know, almost every car is a handmade custom deal. As soon as we start getting some economy of scale, you're going to see, you know, those prices on those things just plummet. And it doesn't really affect the way, even though Tesla is not doing the standard dealership model, others will. You know, General Motors will continue to go down that path. Ford will continue to go down that path. They already have those relationships. It's the easiest path to get things marketed and out on the street. But it's the regulation over, okay, how do we pay for our roads and highway systems? And then the petroleum lobby.
Well... let me throw this out, too. I don't think smart cars will be as effective until we have smart roads
Absolutely.
To go with them.
Absolutely.
And that is we don't manage our infrastructure now. you know.
Yeah. Yeah.
So it seems less likely.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, so I'm going to hit one, government regulation. And I think this one is probably more close to true than anything. So, you've seen all the new FAA regulations on drones. And so I have a drone. I've had a drone for about a year. I use it to check the fence lines on my farm. It's kind of odd, but it's easier than particularly in some places where I have to fly over the creek and I can only see the fence line from the creek side.
Sure.
So, you know, the FAA wants you to, and they're not making it. The funny thing is I haven't decided whether or not I'm going to do it, though, because, what's...
Is there a penalty?
There's no penalty right now, but they want you to pay a $5 registration fee. And so it's kind of like...
For what?
To register my drone to say that I have a drone. And I'm like, why? Because you think I'm going to arm it and I'm going to go and...
Well, I mean, seriously, how many drones are there in this country? Multiply that by $5, that's, you know...
Yeah.
Don't they get enough in our taxes?
Exactly. But I actually believe that the regulation and the group, the working group they put together, which included drone manufacturers, you know, commercial drone manufacturers for personal drones and commercial drones, they all said, do not charge a fee for registration. You will get nobody who will participate. And I totally believe that.
Yeah.
Because... It's different when it's free because it's, well, okay, yeah, I'm doing this. And
do it. Get it over with.
But my bigger issue is the privacy concern because they want to publish everybody's name and address who has a drone. I'm like, whoa, wait a minute.
And how could they not? It's a public record.
Yeah. But I totally believe that will kill the legal commercial drone industry in the United States.
Oh, absolutely.
Because... if people are going to do illegal things, they don't ask permission. They don't even ask forgiveness. You know, so, you know, let's stifle innovation and creativity. The only thing that this does is it does help companies like Amazon, who, you know, are looking at commercializing drones for package delivery and stuff like that. Because it basically, if you're killing the prosumer consumer use of these devices, then they have the airways themselves.
Yeah.
You know. Yeah, they may have to share it with UPS and FedEx.
But they'll fight that out like they do on the ground.
Exactly. Well, in the case of Amazon, they use UPS and FedEx. So more than likely, they're going to license their technology to them.
Right.
But I do believe that by next year, you're going to, all these guys, you know, there's like, there's all these little, the mall up the street has a drone shop in it, you know, and that's what they customize it. And they sell some very nice drones, but commercial photographers and all this, you're only going to see, you know, the big companies who do multi-million-dollar commercials register because I don't care if the government has it registered under my company name, but I don't want it, my personal name, you know. And I do have to question, really, it's not like these things, you know, we're flying Tomahawks and Tomahawk missile-sized drones like the military does, where, you know, can get 10,000, 20,000 feet in the air. You're talking about something like, you know, 300 feet in the air, 400 feet in the air, maybe.
Maybe.
So what is the real impetus behind wanting everybody to register as drones? And I think it goes back to that, this is mission creep. I'm afraid somebody is going to have a registered drone and they're going to arm it and they're going to kill somebody. And I'm thinking, okay, the guy who's going to do that is not going to be the guy
that registered it in the first place. He's going to be the guy who built his own.
Uh-huh.
And
It's that college kid. I think a lot of this has been in response to that college kid who went out in the woods and showed he could, you know, he put a pistol and had an automatic firing mechanism, which the mechanism alone is technically illegal.
Sure.
You know, I think a lot of this is reactionary to that.
Plus, let's not discount the one-off stories of creeper taking video of you know, some dude's daughter. Yeah, I mean, that stuff happens too, and that's being blown out of proportion.
Yeah. Well, my personal feeling on that is so, you know, the guy in Kentucky, who he got in trouble for shooting the drone that was filming his house, where they were filming his daughter in the backyard, I believe is what it was, and he killed it with a shotgun. I think that's your risk.
Yeah.
You know?
Well, it is. I mean,
That should be the... You have every right to do exactly what he did. That's your risk. You know? So what if you lost $2,000 or $2,500 worth of equipment? You shouldn't have been doing that. You should have knocked on everybody's door if you were going to do a flyby or whatever and said, hey, you know, do you mind? Get them to sign a waiver. Duh.
It is what it is.
Yep. Okay, Matt, you're next.
Well, you know, you had mentioned that the IT technology kind of industry is kind of plateaued. I think it's probably time that we see a bigger name disappear. And I think that name is Yahoo.
I agree with you. I don't think Melissa Mayer has done a good job at the helm of Yahoo. And anymore when I see Yahoo, it is a frustration than it is something I want to use. You know, and it's really sad because a lot of... So it's kind of funny. So on the Fortune 500 enterprise IT side of things, government enterprise IT, they're all talking about cloud. I think it's laughable. Cloud has existed since we've had enterprise IT. It started that way, and it never really went away. You know, we just called it different things in between.
Well, it's been branded.
So originally, you know, when they first decided companies, Fortune 500 companies were doing their processing during the day on mainframes, and then at night they would sell off the cycles on the unused mainframes to help pay for them to other entities so they could do their processing. That was cloud. That's providing something. In that case, it was infrastructure as a service. You know, if we want to relate it from the old term to the new term. In the 80s and 90s, when we moved to open systems from mainframe, it was co-hosting or co-locating in a commercial data center. That was infrastructure as a service. Yahoo, when they brought out GeoCities and they had the first, you know, consumer make-yourself websites, that was cloud, because that was application as a service. You know, Apple with .Mac, which is now iCloud, and you know, Gmail and Google Docs, that's all application as a service. It's been around for years. We just rebranded it and called it something new. It's the cloud. It's kind of funny, so I don't know if you watch the show The Middle.
I don't, but I hear it's funny.
So the Christmas episode this year, the daughter goes and plugs their camera into the computer and all the pictures on the computer go away. And the funny thing is they kept unplugging and plugging the computer back in to see if that, you know, that would solve the issue. But when it didn't solve the issue, the mother yells at the husband and says, do we have a cloud? If not, can we get one? You know? She's laughing about that, but in reality, that's how much people don't know what the cloud really is. And so, you know, that's kind of what I was saying. IT as a whole is... We're making things better, and we're seeing bigger adoption in a lot of this stuff, but it's we're kind of at a plateau, you know? The next big thing hasn't come along. What are the technologies that are rife? So Uber has upset the taxi services industry. Uber, on the flip side, I think is going to lose. In the end, all the other taxi companies are going to start offering services very similar to Uber.
You mean legit taxis? Not
legit
like
taxis.
Lyft.
No, not like Lyft. They're going to offer services. There's too many places where just because of the... And I do believe the taxi service as a service industry is something that needs some regulation because the fact that you have people who are essentially even, you know, acting as private chauffeurs... You know, taking other people. It's one of those things where there is, it's too rife for physical violence in some case, whether it's rape or murder or whatever, even theft. It's just too easy. I mean, and that's why you go to any major airport in the world and everyone has a sign up. Like, you go into Dulles in D.C. and it says, you know, we are contracted with Washington Flyer Taxi Service. Do not take rides from any other taxi service. It's not because you'd think that was because they want you to use Washington Flyer, but that's not it. It's actually a liability issue for the airport.
Yeah.
So they're telling you who's the legitimate taxi service because they have the ability to then go back and litigate against Washington Flyer if something happens to somebody who went through that they advocated.
Sure.
I mean, and that's what that's all about. And I still think from a legal concern, that's huge. That's why the taxi services industry exists today the way it does, because it you know, evolved out of the I forget what they call it, but you know, back in the 1800s, you had wagon and horse teams, and you had the stage coaches and stuff, and all of those, even to some degree back then when it was the wild, wild west, were still regulated even by their own companies because they had to provide some modicum of proof that it was going to be a safe ride. So where are we going to, I kind of tangented in my tangent, but where are we going to industries where it's, you know, it's rife for change? And I do believe one of those is what M-Pesa is doing in Kenya. I think the banking industry is rife for a change. The banking industry has gotten too greedy. It is so hard to find a bank today who is interested in the individual customer and not the more corporate services that they provide. You know, all the big banks, Fifth Third, Bank of America, U.S. Bank, they don't care about the individual anymore. So you almost have to go to a local bank, and you have to hope to God they don't get bought by one of the big banks who wants to expand. You know? And I think Ohio is probably better off than most because we actually have regional banks or state banks who do cater to the customer, like Huntington Bank. And we have Wright-Patterson Air Force Base Credit Union. And we have NCR Credit Union. That, you know, those are, they cater to the individual as opposed to catering to the corporate. And they're looking, they're not quite so greedy, but even they have issues in greediness. A good example of where banks need to be regulated more. And people are going to look at me, what are you talking about? Aren't they over? So how about transaction reordering? So banks, and it's common practice today, and it's absolute theft. They will reorder transactions as opposed to when they come in via time and date. They will say you have $3,000 in your account. And in 2 days, you're going to get another $3,000 in your account. So you write a $2,900 check to cover car payment, house payment, whatever. And then you write four or five other checks that add up to another $1,200. Now, but those checks are written over the next 2 days. They all get reported to the bank. They will pay out the lowest number or the lowest dollar amount check first and pay that large one last. Why? Because then they can nail you for overdraft fees. Banks make money on overdraft fees. And that's why if you go and argue with them, most of the time they will remove those overdraft fees.
Plus, in my case, the bank in question actually got sued, class action, and had to shell out millions of dollars in back overdraft fees for just that.
And legal fees and everything else, yeah. But has it really stopped them from doing what they were doing before?
No, but that's why I mention it every time I'm in there.
Yeah.
I'm like, I know this is what you do. I know it's illegal. Just do the right thing.
Yeah. Absolutely.
And, you know, I very rarely have to get upset about it anymore because they know it's coming.
Yeah. The other industry I think that's rife for change is the automobile industry. And what I really think is going to happen with the automobile industry, before we get to the point where we have true self-driving smart cars, is the integration with other personal technology we have. And you can see it. It's been a slow migration. You know, originally it was, you know, you had a cell phone or, you know, even when the first iPhone and the first Android smartphones came out, most cars sold that year, none of the, you know, the Bluetooth, what's Bluetooth? But then we started seeing Bluetooth, and then we started seeing auxiliary ports so you plug your iPod in, which then became your smartphone. And then, you know, now we're seeing Apple Play or CarPlay from Apple and whatever, I forget what Androids is called. And the ability that from some manufacturers that you can turn on whichever flavor you want, you know, in the car, so that there's integration between the data connection in your phone and that radio, so that now you can listen to Pandora or radio, you know, RDO radio. And some of those services, although radio just went away, you know, in your car. And we have Wi-Fi hotspots because people need to use their laptop in their car. I think we're going to continue to see greater integration with that. And as part of that greater integration, you're also going to get greater sensor integration on the car. So I was looking at 2016 cars because we have one that we probably should trade in at this point and get a new car. And, you know, they have lane detection assist on them. And, you know, backup cameras and backup assist. And, you know, that I think we're going to see a lot more of that before we see the completely, you know, automated, get the human out of the equation. Because I think that's one of those things. When you take the human out of the equation, and a car is a personal device, as much as your smartphone is, a car is a personal device. For insurance companies to get on board with it, because they don't want to pay out anything to anybody, they're going to have to start building cars like they build mass transit vehicles, like trains and things that run, you know, mostly automated. And which means that instead of a car being, which I think are ungodly expensive today, a new car costing $22,000 or $30,000 or a new truck at $44,000 to $60,000, you're talking exponential price hike, you know, to, you know, a couple hundred thousand, half a million to get that industrial capability of mechanical and computer devices that are tested to the point where not only are they not apt to fail, but then there's N plus X redundancy in it so that if it should fail, it can be, you know, something else will take over and you'll never notice. And that's why I say it's the 10 to 20 year move in the auto industry. I think there's other things that are going to be much more disruptive first. Frankly, in the United States, it may be a moot point. In 10 to 20 years or 50 years, we're going to have to develop a public transportation system. If the population keeps growing the way it is, you know, I think you're going to see more trolleys, subway systems. You're going to see regional train systems that will link major cities and states, kind of like we have already on the East Coast. But instead of it being a, you know, a diesel locomotive, it'll be more like the Japanese bullet trains. I think we're ripe to see that change in the transportation industry. Because there are certain parts of the industry that
are never, I disagree on that point.
Are never going to change. And one of those is farmers are always going to need pickup trucks and have to use fossil fuels, at least for the foreseeable future. And you know, same thing with tractors and all that stuff. Construction equipment, it's going to have to run on fossil fuels. The technology isn't there to either provide the horsepower or the battery life. We talk about laptops and cell phones with how long the battery life is on them, but you know, electric cars don't have the battery life like a gas car does.
Well, that's why I'm still looking forward to Mr. Fusion. You know, I mean, it's...
Yeah, how's that cold fusion technology working for you right now?
I don't know. I'd have to say not so good.
I'll never forget that. I was in high school when that happened. I was like a sophomore. You know, hey, we developed cold fusion. Nobody else can reproduce the results.
Match.
Huh.
Isn't that weird?
That is strange. So go back to your point that you disagree with public transportation.
Well, Americans are rugged individualists at heart.
Some are. I think both coasts, you'd find that there are much more sheep than they are individuals. Where we live and where we're from, and I totally agree with you. I think the heartland and the south of America.
And that's why I think you're going to see those developments where they're already taking place, East Coast, West Coast. That leaves a vast swath of America.
And there's going to be places where I totally agree that would never make sense. It would never make sense to, you know, hook Butte, Montana to Omaha, Nebraska.
It doesn't make sense to connect Cleveland to Cincinnati, yet they tried to do it.
Yeah. I don't think that's done. And that actually makes much more sense than, you know, trying to connect even Washington, D.C. to Cincinnati or Washington, D.C. to Columbus. But there's two reasons to do it. One, it brings, all of a sudden, if now you get the taxpayers of a region, in this case a state, or you get taxpayers in from the federal level, which you know how it works. There's always federal money and there's state money. And there's always far more federal money than there is state money.
But here's the thing.
But it appeals to everybody, even, you know. So let's take Ohio, for example, where we have a rhino governor like Kasich. He will use it both ways. He will say that, hey, you know, by linking Cleveland to Columbus and Columbus to Cincinnati and having a system that goes all the way through, and then eventually, you know, we'll go east-west too on the I-70 corridor, and we'll link, you know, Dayton to Columbus and what's on the east side? Zanesville?
Nothing.
Zanesville. I mean,
fair enough.
You know, because all of a sudden we probably hit, if you ran public transportation through there in a train type thing, and it's a bullet train where, like, you know.
But that's just it. The technologies that they talk about employing right now.
Or like Amtrak type technologies. Yeah.
You can go from Cincinnati to Cleveland in half the time it'll take that train to get from Cincinnati to
Cleveland.
And that will never work.
But here's the argument you're going to get from the Socialist Democrats. And that is, you know, look, by doing that, we're providing more job opportunities because people who can't afford to own a car or drive that far now can, you know, move around the state and find whether they do or not.
Your 8 a.m. job in Cleveland, you would have to leave at 3:30 in the morning to get there.
Oh yeah,
if you're in Cincinnati. I mean,
under the current system, I don't believe that it will get built the way it was proposed. I believe it'll get built as a bullet train system, and I don't think it'll be people who'll be commuting from Cleveland to Cincinnati. I think it'll be people who'll be commuting from Cincinnati to Columbus, or Cleveland to Columbus, or Columbus to Cleveland, Columbus to Cincinnati.
Columbus is one of the fastest growing regions in the state for sure.
Yeah. But if you could hit 60% of the population of the state, which you would, just by linking all of that together. And if you had a bullet train that, you know, in your car.
Plus, here's the other problem. Okay, so you live in Cincinnati. How do you get to the train station? Okay, once you get there and you get to Cleveland, how do you get to your job? Now you're looking for a job within walking distance of a train station.
Oh, I know.
You know, I mean, it's.
But, you know, then you're going to get the people who argue, because look what they started doing in Cincinnati. So they've had the new trolley system that it hasn't been brought online, but they've been testing it because, you know,
you want a prediction? That will never, ever actually officially launch.
Never. It doesn't matter if it ever does. It's the fact that on theoretically on paper, I'm going to ask for federal and state tax monies for it, and I'm going to have every argument in the book to do it. I think it'll happen. It may not happen and work well, or happen and be implemented the way it should have been.
But I think arguably it's going to happen.
The thing is, so here's the downside to all of this, because City of Dayton has certainly done this. And part of the Montgomery County, which Dayton is the county seat for, is now instead of busing your crime around in the county, I'm now going to bus my crime around the state. I'm going to train it around. Because what am I going to do? Hop on a train, go to some affluent area of whatever city, scope it out, perpetrate a crime, jump on the train and be in, you know, two major cities away.
That's the opposite problem of the job seeker from Cincinnati going to Cleveland. Now you're looking for a high-end residential area within walking distance of a train. It seems unlikely.
Oh, I don't think it's unlikely. Because I think the cities artificially design systems to be like that. So, like, a good example is, so I like D.C. because they've had the Metro, which is their subway system forever. So
the Metro used to not run out to Northern Virginia and Dulles Airport at all. That's a very, very,
I mean, hugely concentrated affluent area, and it's a very large affluent area. Well, they're at Tyson's now. They're building all the way out to Dulles Airport, which means you're getting into Reston, Herndon, Chantilly, you know, all these areas where there's lots of money, lots of high-end residential areas, and we brought our
crime mover right down to it,
you know, and I don't think it's going to stop people, and particularly because I will say this about at least my impression from Kasich, and I mean, I want to be president, and why do I want to be president? Not because there's any altruistic, he wants to, you know, represent the United States and further the people of the United States. It's all about personal power for him.
Sure.
And
I mean, just kind of, and I will say the same thing about Boehner. It was all about personal power.
Ohio politicians are kind of like that. He will push, since he really has no chance of getting the presidential nomination. If he does, I'm going to go liberate an island and make it mine. He is stuck in this, I need to build personal power. Well, how can I build personal power? And he's not the only one. Well, look, DC and them have all of this. How am I gonna make people admire me more? Well, you know, if I bring jobs to Ohio, which through the construction alone, he can artificially for a short period of time create some jobs.
The problem with this argument is that when he was running against Strickland, he was against it.
Oh, I know.
And effectively killed it when he got into office.
Doesn't mean he won't bring it back up for different reasons.
Well, and he can't in Ohio anyway because he's term limited out.
Exactly. So.
But the next guy.
Yep.
The next guy is always the problem.
Yep. So do you have any more predictions?
Well, I have one for sports.
What's that?
The Reds will finish in last place. 100-game loss season? It'll be close to that.
I have no comment on that. Because I can't disagree with you.
There you go.
But I have one last one.
Okay.
And I'm going to expand it from a little more than what I wrote down. And this is another cut. I have a lot of government predictions this year. It is an election year, and full disclosure, Matt and I do live in the great state of Ohio, which unfortunately becomes hell during election years. So you can't turn the TV on without watching 30 minutes of election campaign ads and 5 minutes of an actual TV show. We probably will end up talking this year a lot more about politics than we normally do. But this last one is interesting, particularly in light of both what we already mentioned in the state of California and then I'm no longer going to do reciprocal concealed carry, even though other states meet all of our requirements and exceed them.
Virginia.
But that is gun control, this whole, not just the talk, but if anybody legislates anymore, because again, we're not on the left and left coasts, or the left and lefter coasts. You know, we live in the heartland, where we at least people know what the Constitution is and can actually state.
They've heard of it.
Yeah. But I do believe all this gun control talk is going to drive gun sales through the roof in 2016. It's already started.
Well, Barack Obama has been the gun salesman of the year 7 years running.
Yeah.
I mean, every time that dude opens his mouth, people go buy guns. I mean, that's just the truth of it.
Yep.
I don't see that changing.
I think it's going to increase, particularly until the uncertainty of who is going to be the president unfolds in November.
Well, you know, I think some of that is tied in to economics as well. You know, right now people are scared.
Yeah.
They're afraid. Crime is up. Of the personal kind.
Yeah.
You know, and while there are FBI crime statistics that will tell you that as the number of guns goes up, the number of crimes go down, I think you're still going to find that on the individual level, people are still a little leery. And let's not forget, we've got public mass shootings that, you know, the only real defense for is a good guy with a gun taking out the bad guy with a gun. Those sorts of stories are just going to elevate.
Absolutely.
Purchase.
Absolutely.
And I think you're going to see more and more states do legalized, not only concealed carry, but also open carry. It's certainly already the law in Ohio, but I think you're going to see a lot more of it as we go forward.
Yeah.
At least for the foreseeable future.
I agree with you. I think it'll be a banner year for Ruger and Glock and all my friends in the firearms industries. I also think, particularly with the bill that's on the floor at the House right now, where they actually call out semi-automatic pistols and assault-style weapons. And the funny thing is, there is no such thing. It's made up by CNN. You can look it up. Some CNN reporter created the whole concept of assault-style weapons, and then everybody latched onto it and started to determine that, well, if it has a pistol grip, it's an assault weapon. If it has a magazine, it's an assault weapon. The only thing I see about that's an assault is an assault on our intelligence, but
that's how media works.
Exactly. You know, it's funny how many freedoms our ancestors have fought for that we're willing to give up because of fear. When in reality, those freedoms protect you from that fear. Because it's not a far step from taking away your ability to fight back to taking away your ability to speak freely.
Now, again, this goes back to how pervasive liberalism has indoctrinated our education system. I mean, we used to spend time talking about the Constitution and the founders and what they thought about things.
Now we're busy taking down statues of Andrew Jackson and Thomas Jefferson. And
you better take down that rebel flag from the State House wall, because, you know,
you might offend somebody.
Having those conversations is offensive. Yeah. I just, okay. If that's the way you think, then I can't help you. Yeah, that's where we're at as a country, as a society. So.
Yeah, well, that and more deep thoughts to think about. Until the next episode of Gizmo Sapiens, we want to hear from you guys, so please provide us some feedback at gizmosapiens@gmail.com. That's gizmosapiens@gmail.com. Or you can DM me on Twitter at core. That's at @CoeUR. Do you have a place where people can stalk you online, Matt?
Well, you can hit me up on Facebook or you can send me an email at wmdtvmatt with two T's at yahoo.com, which will be going away this year.
Ah, you going to Gmail or
I don't know where I'm going.
Outlook?
I've been on Yahoo since the beginning, so who knows?
I still have a Yahoo email address. I don't use it, so.
I do. I have 5,000 unread emails. That'll tell you. I mean, I go through it every day, but some of them I just don't get to it.
Yeah.
When you've been on a system as long as I have, that's what you get. But that's where you can reach.
Okay. Well, we will see you on the digital flip side.
To Gizmo Sapiens, a technology and entertainment podcast. You can reach us at our email address at gizmosapiens@gmail.com. That's gizmosapiens@gmail.com. We'd really love to hear from you, and we'll see you next week from the digital flip side.